Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler. Years ago, I heard someone say that you are either the author of your own life or you are just a character in someone else's story. You deserve more than that. You can write your story, your life, your way. Let's get started. Have you ever thought, what do I want to do when I grow up? Well, apparently that's not a question that we answer once when we are in our teens or our early 20s, and then we're done with it. Because it seems like that question has a way of showing up multiple times throughout our lives. In today's episode, we're going to dive deep into that question and how we can explore it and navigate it, as well as how to move past some of the most common barriers that arise when we are exploring it. A little bit about my guest before you meet her. Her name is Donna Tashin. She is the founder of Vibrant Living International, a nonprofit organization. She is a life mastery coach, an ordained minister, a podcaster, and an author. She helps bring accelerated transformation to people across the world. She empowers people to master life, spirit, soul, and body. She also produces a podcast called You Were Designed for Greatness and has written 3 books. Donna, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bobby. It is a pleasure to be here.
I am so excited that we finally get to talk. We've had a few issues with our schedules, so we're finally connecting. I can't wait. So why don't we just dive in? Do you want to tell us a little bit about your story?
Sure. There is something about when we hit those moments, and they're different ages for different people, but what do I want to do now that I'm all grown up?
Yeah. It's a tough question, isn't it?
It is a tough question. And even as a life mastery coach, which I was doing a form of coaching prior when this occurred in my life, but I had been working as a realtor, and I had been working in 2007 and things when the market fell. And I began to specialize in short sales, which, if you're not quite aware, that is helping someone who owes more on their home than the market currently will work, and they have defaulted. And it is working with the lender to sell the house for what the market says it's worth, as opposed to what they owe. So say the market says it's worth $50,000 and they owe $100,000.
That's tough.
And sometimes there was multiple mortgages. So I would negotiate with the bank, helping them to sell it for $50,000, and then the debt would be forgiven.
Yeah.
And so I was known as a short sale specialist. Most realtors hated short sales because they took 6 months to a year to close.
It's funny you mentioned that. We bought it's 3 houses ago when we were in Evergreen, Colorado. We got it as a short sale.
Yes.
That is the most deceiving name ever.
Absolutely. It is nothing short about it.
It's stressful.
It is the stock market name and financial name of shorting something of what they are. That's where it came from. But no, it is not short at all.
And it's so stressful.
I did that for about 10 years. It was still residual. It was about 8, 9, I might have been 10 years, I think I did my last one. And then I began to be unhappy. It was going back to normal real estate. I should have been ecstatic. So I began to look for other ways to do the gifting that I hadn't quite defined. But I knew there was something more, just that feeling that I know I'm supposed to do something more. So I took a part-time job, still working as a realtor, and thinking that this job was going to turn into my specialty is a form of coaching, mentoring, helping people exceed, excel, and all of that. And I thought this job would do that.
No. Guess again.
And I really put when you put like all your expectations, I call it all your eggs in one basket, like this is going to be it. And it's not.
It's disappointing.
And man, it hit me hard. I still remember the day. I remember the weather. It was March 31st. And in Michigan, we were doing that sleety, rain kind of thing. And it matched my face. I felt lost, just totally lost. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And through the next soul searching process, which I can share some steps on what I went through, but through that next process, it was asking that question, what do I actually want to do? I happened to be 49 at the time. And, you know, you can go into my life is half over or what am I, you know, all of those negative things. I did it. Yep. I did it.
That's right.
And doubting myself and all the things I always told my clients never to do, I was doing them.
Yeah. It's hard not to though, isn't it?
It's so hard. It's always easier to tell somebody else than it is to do it yourself. And everybody knows that. So, but I really took some time and I did praying. I did seeking counsel. What am I really supposed to do? And one of the first things I saw was this red thread going through my life where I've always been, as far back as I can remember, sitting and talking mostly with women, helping them to overcome life, just life. Hmm. And in those days, we called it mentoring.
Yeah.
We didn't really call it coaching, and it was usually in some kind of volunteer capacity. But I mean, I did it regularly. I'll see you next Tuesday at 10. It was not just haphazard. It was done regularly. And what I saw was when I was in my sweet spot, that's what I call it, it was like this red thread going through my life of I was always doing that. And every single thing I'd ever done in those 49 years had that in it.
Yeah.
Somewhere. And how do I do that? How do I do that and make a living too?
That's
and
right.
Someone said, you need to become a coach. And I pictured a football coach. And I'm like, that's not who I am. No. I mean, a life coach or a health coach. So I went back to school after some searching and did some research, all of the things, and went back to school. And now I think I have 4 certifications on the wall. I just keep growing and things. And how to do what I was naturally gifted at even better, but how to run it as a business instead of just a hobby. And so how do we do that? So that is my journey of reevaluating and going through. One of the biggest things is I got a coach because I didn't know all my hidden blind spots, even though I had been a coach and helping me to see, you're afraid to succeed, or what will it mean if you get more visible? And how does it mean to have, to do all of this? To do what you used to do for free and ask people to pay you. Yeah. All of those mindsets, man, the inner game stuff. Wow.
It's huge. And part of it is, and I'm so glad you mentioned that you got a coach, even though you are a coach, because it's not like when you were talking earlier, you know, when you said you started doing all those things that you always tell people never to do, sometimes it's not an intellectual pursuit. So it's not a logical, like, well, I know that doesn't make sense. I shouldn't be saying that to myself. It's a very different thing. So can I ask you real quick too? You've called it a red thread through your life. What do you mean by red thread?
It was the visual I saw. It was just the picture I saw that was connecting everything. So it was just the visual of what I imagined.
Yeah. I love that because it makes it it makes it stand out, you know? Okay. So for you, it seems like it was pretty clear for you that it was time to kind of reevaluate. Is that a fair way of saying it?
Yes.
Okay. Is it always that way, do you think, for people like with your clients, or is it sometimes sneaky?
I think it begins sneaky because I had been dissatisfied for a while, but usually to get us to make a change, it's usually something bigger. We have to be more uncomfortable with where we were.
Yeah.
Than the uncomfortableness of the unknown.
Yeah.
to say Geronimo and jump off the cliff. And you remember, I had lost a job and I didn't have that much real estate. How was I going to pay for this school?
That's right.
I didn't have any idea. And it wasn't a little amount.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just said Geronimo because it was more uncomfortable where I was than where I, what the unknown of not knowing whether I was going to fall or I was going to be able to fly as I took off from that. So,
yeah. It's funny that you say that. I had she was a guest a while ago and her episode went live just last week. And she was talking about, you know, sometimes we think, oh, I'm afraid to step outside my comfort zone. But she said, as soon as you usually start to have that thought, it's actually no longer your comfort zone because you're getting signals that you're not comfortable there. Mm-hmm. She goes, at that point, it's your convenience zone, not your comfort zone. And I thought, oh, I liked that quite a bit because you are getting those signals.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. How have you seen it show up for other people that it was time for them to make that reevaluation?
Well, dissatisfaction at work, even difficult situations at work, relationships. It could be about really, and it's not always job related. Mm-mm. It's relationships that should have been ended and haven't. You know, all different kinds of uncomfortableness in different parts of our life is where all of that comes up.
Yeah. And I think when you mentioned that thing about the relationships that maybe should have ended or been reevaluated or renegotiated,
mm-hmm.
those can be tricky for people.
Right.
Because there's a lot of emotional ties to that. So you said that a few minutes ago, you said something like, you know, you went through some soul searching and that you could share kind of a process that you used. What can you tell us more about that?
Sure. The part of my process was prayer, as I knew that there was something bigger for me to do than I believed I was capable of. And seeking counsel is another one. I did a lot of journaling of what I really wanted things to look like and learning how to make that happen. So those were the main things. And then I seek counsel. So it was mm-hmm. between those three areas is, first of all, what do you even love to do?
Mm.
You know, what is it that you love to do? If it didn't matter, if anything was possible, what would you do? What would it look like?
Right.
And it can be for every part of our life. It, you know, business or personal and spiritual, all of those parts of our life is like, what would you like it to look like for just a minute? If anything is possible, what would that look like? And begin to paint the picture of, because we are, our subconscious wants to come up with, well, that never worked. You tried that before, or mm-hmm. who do you think you are? Or, what are some other ones? You know, yeah, or you'll have somebody help you with those statements. Like, why do you think that would work? That's dumb.
You know? There's plenty of people to tell us that.
Oh, all of those kind of things. So be real careful. One of the ways that I teach it, when you're developing that baby dream,
mm-hmm.
treat it like you would a newborn. You don't just hand it to anybody.
That's right.
That you have only certain people can hold that newborn. Or be around that newborn. And when you've got a new dream that's developing or dusting off an old one that's birthing again, be careful who you share it with.
Yeah.
As it begins to mature. And the next thing I did is if I believed it would work, what's one step I would take today?
That's right. Just one step. And I'm a huge believer in the one step, but why do you think it's so important?
Because if you're visionary, which listeners, I have a feeling your listeners are, they see the big picture of what it could be like. And that can stop us. We get frozen. Mm-hmm. I don't know how do you eat an elephant?
That's right.
It's one bite at a time and learning to break that down, because any project, anything you accomplish will start with one step.
One step.
And yep. Begin to take the one step. One of the best advice I ever got from one of my coaches was to get up every day and proceed as if success was inevitable.
Hmm.
Instead of getting up every day and thinking of all the reasons why this won't work.
Yeah. Because that's probably what a lot of people do.
And it is our default to find out how to prevent failure or some sort. So if you knew it was going to work, if success was inevitable in whatever area of your life it is, how would you behave?
Yeah.
And it changes your behavior. It changes what's the one thing I could do today. Mm-hmm. Because if I think making sales calls is going to end up in rejection, then I'm going to find, oh, my closet needs to be cleaned out and the car needs to be washed. And
my sock drawer is a mess.
Yeah, exactly. There's always something else that we can do instead.
But that's right.
If success was inevitable, then what would you do today? And begin to proceed that way. And it changes your outcome because you changed your beliefs and your behavior today.
That's right. Because you're acting differently.
Yes.
You know, and on the one thing too, what I've noticed is so many times, I think people hesitate to take action because they think, well, I don't have the whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Right. Just identify one thing, because by doing one thing, even if you fail, even if that one thing doesn't work, it's going to move you forward because you're going to learn something, you know, you're going to get new data, something's going to happen. And I think we build confidence even when we do fail because we took action.
One of the paradigms I teach in my programs is there's no such thing as failure, only feedback.
That's right.
And learning to be able to do that. I've heard Martin Luther King said, faith is is taking a step on a staircase when you can't see the whole staircase.
Yeah. That's a great one.
And you can't see it, but you want to see the whole thing, but you can't see it. You can only see one or two steps.
Mm-hmm.
And as you move up the steps, you begin to see more steps. But, and I think sometimes, I really think that's a blessing, because if I saw what I was doing today, when I started, it would have freaked me out.
That's right.
And I don't think we're supposed to see the whole staircase because we're not ready to be there yet. So it is a growth as I walk up the stairs.
That's right. Okay. So that reminds me, it was a little trip I took there when you were talking about it. Because I think about like road cycling and I love road cycling and I love Nordic skiing. And I think about when I started both those sports. Like if you'd told me 12 years ago, 10 years ago, whenever it was, that I would now be cycling mountain passes in the Rocky Mountains, like mountain passes that used to scare me when I would drive them in a car, I would have thought, like, there's no way, like cars overheat on these mountain passes and I cycle them. So that was one thing. So that really got me going. And then I also thought about when I am cycling those passes, there are some times when they're steep and like your lungs are burning, your legs are thinking, you know, screaming at you. And what I'll do in those stretches is I will pick a landmark, like 100 feet up, maybe 100 yards, probably 50, you know, 100 yards, whatever it was or is. And I'll look at that. And I'm like, I'm not going to look all the way up. I'm looking at that landmark.
Right.
My job is to get to that landmark. Right. And when I get to that landmark, I'll pick another one. Because if you look at the whole mountain, it is overwhelming.
Yep.
I totally agree with you. Love that. Love that quote. By the way, I wanted to comment too, the thing when you said your baby dream,
mm-hmm.
That's a really important one. I heard that many years ago and it really resonated for me because I don't know how it is for you or your clients or for the listeners, but some of the people who have been the least supportive of my dreams have been those that you would think would have been the most supportive.
Yep.
And that can be tough.
It can be very tough.
Yeah. So that's really great advice. And I wanted to really make sure I highlighted that because I think that's really important. So what about if someone has, like when you ask that question, you know, like, if it's some version of what would your perfect day be or what would you be doing? Mm-hmm. What if someone's like, I really don't have a clear idea?
Mm-hmm.
What then?
That happens a lot of times.
That's reassuring.
Yes. And it's very normal for, it isn't, I don't have a perfect formula to say how I work through each individual in my conversation with them. But what did you used to want to do as a child is a great question. Mm. And if you could do one perfect thing, what would that be as opposed to trying to figure out the whole mountain?
Okay.
Trying to just do the one, what would be one thing you would love to do? Well, I love to garden. Okay, write that down. We're building a day. We're not saying it's the whole day, but, and what have you liked about your jobs?
Mm. Yeah.
What part of your jobs did it just feel easy? Like everybody knows how to do that.
And everybody doesn't.
But everybody thinks they do. We think whatever's easy to us is easy to everybody else.
Right.
And so just begin to ask questions. And if they're having a really hard time, I'm like, well, what's one favorite thing that you like to do? Well, I like to go to a coffee shop and get a specialty coffee. All right, let's start with that. Why don't you do that tomorrow? Just right. Begin to do something that you enjoy. It doesn't have to be hit big.
That's right.
Beginning to birth it, to allow it to be possible. A lot of the women that I work with have had trauma in their life.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. therefore, trauma teaches you to prevent disappointment and to always prepare for failure or danger.
That's right.
And so that is the total opposite of beginning to dream and have hope for the future. So there is it okay? That's why I started with several of them. Go get a cup of coffee tomorrow. Just go do that and sit and drink it. And you don't have to do anything there for half hour and then come back and we'll talk.
Really?
And just begin to build that dream. So that's tell people that's had those kind of things in their life. It's even more difficult. I have always been told I'm this. I don't know how to see myself as that, as anything else. And so beginning to help through with that.
Yeah. Now that last one, I've always been told I'm this.
Mm-hmm.
How do you help break through that? Because that's a tough one for, I think, a lot of people.
Well, I have a signature program that I've created called Turn Your Baggage into Luggage.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have the life you dreamed. And so I've created a whole program that help people to walk through the labels. One of the mm-hmm. things I say, Vibrant Living's goal is to stop identity theft. And I'm not talking about our credit cards. And there's some, we're told you're stupid. You never do that. Or you aren't good at that. Or whatever. You get yes. the picture. We've all been told mm-hmm. something. And we so have. We create these labels that were perhaps not supposed to be put on us at all. Most of the time not. Because labels are not ever, you're brilliant, you're beautiful, you're going to do everything. They're just not.
They're never those things.
So helping people to let go of the labels yeah. that have been placed on them. And that's a process because there's emotions attached to it. There's forgiveness attached to it. There's healings attached to all of that. And helping people to walk through. So the first step that would be a takeaway today is begin to identify your labels.
Yeah.
And begin to and write down the crap, write down the stuff, write it down and then say, do I know this to really be true deep inside me?
Yeah. Even if it was true when I was like 12.
Yes.
Is it still true now? I'll never forget this, Donna. I was coaching. He was a sales manager. And I'd been observing him because my role in that regard was to help them become better coaches for their team. And I thought he was really good. I thought he was a really good communicator. And we were having a conversation. He's like, I know I've never been good at, I know I'm not a good communicator. And I said, why do you say that? Because I'm thinking he was a pretty good communicator. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, when I was in high school, I had a teacher tell me that. I'm like, so when you were like 14 or 15, he said, yeah. I'm like, it's a few decades later. Have you not learned anything? I mean, and he kind of started laughing and he's like, my God, he goes, yeah. Why am I still thinking of myself as I was when I was 15?
Yep.
But I think we do that all the time.
And we don't realize it.
No.
Those hidden places that we don't realize, those inner mindsets that's still affecting us, that's making him self-doubt himself today and just kind of take a back foot to who he really is. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, is begin to identify the labels that's been put on you. And if you can't see whether they are or not, like that gentleman, find someone you can talk to that can help you to see clearly. So we can take off the limiting glasses and put on glasses that help us really see. One of my favorite things is for my own life, as well as others, is helping us discover the gifts that we really are capable of. Because the things that I'm doing, I told myself I couldn't do. And I'm doing them. And so, but they really are gifts that I have. And so learning to be able to get someone else to talk to bounce those off of as well.
It's huge. And I think that's one of the big values and benefits of having a coach, because a coach who's really listening, they will hear those types of things.
Yes.
You know, and as far as the labels, that's really good advice for people to know it's a good practice to try to start identifying those. One of the things I found, this was years and years ago, because at first I'm like, I don't think I have any labels. And then I started journaling, like just thoughts that would come up. And then I went back and reviewed my journals, and then I could notice the patterns and the themes. And I'm like, oh, that's a label. That's a label that was put on me when I was a kid by someone who probably didn't have my best interest at heart in that moment. So it's a very powerful thing. One thing I wanted to go back to too, I've been meaning to do this. When you talked about the red thread running through your life, I love that. How can people identify that for themselves?
Well, look at different places in your life. I used the word sweet spot, that place where you were enjoying whatever you were doing and the place where you felt, I don't know how to describe what I mean by sweet spot. Easy. It's fulfilling. It's energizing, not depleting.
That's right. That's a huge one right there.
Yes. All of those kind of things that you're like, I need to do this again. Those types of things, and notice them. Go back to your childhood and like, were there any there, depending on what your childhood was like, and just go forward. What was it? Was there any place or places that you noticed that in your life, and then begin to connect the dots? Of what, because it is like a puzzle.
It is.
And begin to connect the dots on what might be, you know, because I'm like, okay, so I sit and talk with women. How do you do, what does that mean? You know, and it's like, so I just sit and talk to the people. I'm like, the only thing I could think of was a counselor. And I'm like, I'm not going back to school for 15 years or whatever. And I'm like, so what do I do? You know, and so I just begin to ask questions. So what do I do with this? How do I do this? And I just begin to search. And so just begin to connect the dots and ask questions. Yeah. So how could I do this and do this within whatever's going on in your life? And I keep going back to get a coach.
Yeah. Well, and part of what I hear there too is the separation of exploring, right? Mm-hmm. Without that attachment to, well, what do I do with it? Yes. So I think that sometimes that rush to what do I do with it? I think that can kill it before it begins.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because there's something to that exploring, you know? So that seems like that could be a common barrier that people could have, right? I don't know what to do with this. I had one guest, he's a really good friend of mine too. He went through it and he was, he reached out to people. No, he started thinking about, why do people call me? Like friends mm-hmm. and family. And he's like, wow, it's always because of X going on. And that was really like a eye opener for him. And at first he's like, what am I going to do with that? But you got to just trust it and keep going. So what are some other common obstacles people might have when they're going through this process of reevaluation and maybe reinvention?
Fear,
mm-hmm.
Self-doubt.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
Yeah.
That's another big one. I don't have all the resources I think I need. Has anyone ever done this before? They were smarter than me or whatever.
they had a better network. They're more blessed, whatever.
Yeah. All the things. I tried this before and I failed.
Mm.
You're different wherever you are. It's just like, you're not 15 anymore kind of thing. It's like, you're different. So all of those things usually rise up.
Yeah. So any advice for someone who might be like in that phase experiencing some of those things?
For me, the way that I handled it, that's the only really suggestion I have is I write down all my fears.
Hmm.
First of all, I want to face them because nagging. They're nagging in the back of your head, whether you're going to face them or not. They're nee, 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 nee.
It's like, they're talking to you.
They're talking. So face them. So I have my clients. I did this for myself is I create two columns on the page and write down all the things I'm afraid of. I don't have enough resources. I don't know what I'm doing. I tried this before. I don't know anybody who's made money at this. Whatever, all of the things, write them down and then begin to create an affirmation that addresses those.
Interesting.
So I don't have enough resources. I have enough to take a step today and I don't have to have everything right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're answering those fears with actual truth. You failed before. Yeah, but that was 10 years ago. Whatever. Just throwing out, you know, and it doesn't mean that I will fail today. My affirmation for that is my past does not determine my future.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I let it.
That's right. Unless we allow it to.
Unless we allow it to. So begin to create affirmations to address it because it's going on in your subconscious, whether you realize it or not, whether you want to admit it or not, they're going on. And the only way to change it is change what the subconscious, the inner beliefs, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I wrote was a book of 30 days of affirmations that are the most popular things. And so every day for 30 days, you have new ones and you can pick the ones that speak to your fears the most. So
that's
that book. I wrote that book. It's one of the books I've written to be able to address this, but that's what changed me over those time period that I was before Vibrant Living was launched. Was these are my fears. This is what I'm going to choose to believe instead.
Yeah.
And begin to say them every day. It's a practice I still do today, every single day. I now have thousands of them written down. And I have a system that I use that brings them back up every so many months or every so many weeks. And I read them again to see if something's hitting.
Okay.
So constantly addressing those inner beliefs that are new things are rising up. So I'm doing something new and continue to reinforce the truth, not the fears.
Yeah. So I love that. Now with the affirmations that you have, you said you have a system for it. So you have different ones that come up every day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have any of the same that you do every day?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that I am focused on, the fears that are real current today, because this is something I do all the time. So the ones that are real current, I do every day. So begin to transform that inner belief to believe something different. The system I use is simply Evernote. And I just type them in it. It has a reminder. I just have it come back up again. And I read my Evernote. I've been using that for 12 years now.
Yeah.
And that's just that. So it's not anything difficult. I just type them in. I find them in all kinds of places, copy and paste them. Remember, Evernote can pull from the web. It can pull all kinds of places. And then I just reread them and reread them out loud. Mm-hmm. Is there something powerful about the spoken word?
That's right. Yeah. Affirmations are really powerful. I think that they got a really bad rap. There was that one Saturday Night Live bit. What is it? Stuart Smalley, he'd always do the affirmations. And I think that people, you know, where it's like, oh, they're silly, but no, they're so powerful.
They're working, whether you realize it or not, because you're saying things anyway.
You're saying things anyway. And it's, yeah, it is really powerful. So I love that. I love the Evernote idea. That's really great. So this has been a great conversation. I appreciate you sharing your story and the ideas. Anything else that you want to add before we wrap up and you can, and then tell people where they can find you and about your programs and stuff?
No, I think we've in this conversation, some things that people can walk away and okay. actually begin to implement this, these take notes. If you listen to this again, you know, beginning to sit, write down what were the steps that I could begin to do mm-hmm. and realize that you are the creator of your future, mm-hmm. not the person next to you or not that inner critic. But you get to create and choose what you believe, and you can live vibrantly.
Yeah, we can all do that.
Yes.
And that'd be beautiful. So yes. Where can people learn more about you and your programs, Donna?
My website is the best place, and it is the letter I, vibrantliving.com. The book I mentioned is under a book tab there. There's other free resources that are available too. And if they wish to chat with me, there's a schedule and a chat with me also there.
Perfect. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. So I just want to thank you for your time and for coming on. I really appreciate you sharing so freely.
Thank you, Bobby.
That wraps up this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and for listening. I hope that you took a lot away from this conversation. And by the way, now is a great time to hit that subscribe button so that you never miss another episode. I hope that you have a terrific week, be well, and that you continue to thrive no matter what.